Okay, so this is the second lecture in the Energy and Metabolism Unit 1, and it's on enzymes. And I entitled the lecture, Proteins at the Heart of Every Reaction in Living Systems. So we're going to begin talking about energy and reaction rate. Many reactions in living systems are exergonic, and we talked about the word derivation last year, yesterday, saying that X means out and erg means energy, so it's energy outward. And we can think of these reactions as you see here on the right, the picture. You start with a reactant that has so much free energy, and then a product with less free energy. And so the exergonic reaction is what we call a downhill reaction. They have what we call a net release of free energy. Now, since these exergonic reactions are downhill, you might think to yourself, hey, the products have less energy than reactants. It's a downhill reaction. Therefore, it should proceed spontaneously, kind of like a ball rolling down a hill. You know that up at the top of the hill, it has more gravitational potential energy. So it just starts rolling down the hill and starts converting that into kinetic energy. It's just a natural, spontaneous process. Well, as you can see in the next slide, there is a problem. And the problem is this. All reactions have an energy barrier that needs to be crossed in order to proceed forward. And we call this barrier the activation energy. And you can see it illustrated in the illustration to the right. Now, if you were a chemist, what would be the simplest way of getting around this problem? So what do you guys think? Like, you want to get over this energy barrier, and you're in a chem lab, and you want to use the simplest, easiest method to get two reactants to react together to form a product. What are you going to do? No, that's not the easiest thing you're going to do. You're going to heat it up. You're going to just turn on the Bunsen burner. Absolutely, okay? Now, why does this work? Why does heating it up work? Why does it work really well? Yeah. No, it's not. Yeah. Yeah, there's more to it. Yeah. No. That's right. It speeds the molecules up. When you heat the molecules up, they start moving faster. When they start moving faster, we say they have more kinetic energy. And so you can imagine my two fists, you know, as two molecules, and if I heat them up, they just start wiggling faster and faster and faster, and that means they, boom, they hit into each other a lot harder. If you hit into each other a lot harder, you're going to probably form a bond more easily. You're going to stick together, and now you're a product. Does that make sense to you guys? So if you want things to react more quickly, get over that activation energy, just heat them up. Add more kinetic energy. They're going to heat each other more frequently and harder, and therefore they're going to react more quickly. Why isn't this a good solution for living organisms? Why wouldn't we want to do this? Can someone give me an answer? Yeah. No? Yeah. No? Right, but why? Why? Based on what you learned in the last chapter. What happens to proteins? What do we call that? We have a name for it.
Denature.
Yes, denature. If you heat an organism, the proteins will denature. They'll come apart. And why is that important? Why? I mean, come on. The protein's still got all the amino acids in the right sequence. So what if it sort of unravels a little bit? What's the problem with that? Yeah. Yes, very good. Structure causes function, and if you somehow mess with the structure, you somehow mess with the function. So you don't want these things to have a structure that is messed up with. You know, if you mess with the structure, you mess with the function. Okay, so here's the solution. What's the solution for living organisms, Brian? Very good. Okay. So an enzyme is a biological catalyst. And you learned about catalysts in chemistry, and you realize that catalysts are chemicals that can speed up the reaction by lowering the activation energy. And so you see my picture here. You see the without the catalyst, you've got a much it's the bigger hill you have to get over. And you add an enzyme, and then you lower that hill. And that's essentially what it does. You lower the activation energy, so you need less energy to get this thing going. Okay. So how do they work? Well, they work using the lock and key model. And you can see this amazing illustration to the right that I actually did before we went to this really nice system where we have PowerPoint and so forth. We used to use overhead projectors, and I used to draw all my notes on the overhead projector. And I really was proud of this one, so I couldn't let it go. I just had to scan it into my computer and include it in my PowerPoint. So, what's that? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. That's an A for the day. Okay. So, as you can see, or maybe you can't, the first model that we used was this lock and key model. And the way it works is you can see my enzyme illustrated here. And what you'll see is I've made two little, one thing that kind of looks like a little rectangle and one thing that kind of looks like a little triangle. And that is the active site. And that represents, that's like the lock, okay? And then the key are the reactants. And you can see the reactants are up above it. One is kind of a square rectangle. One is a triangle. And you'll notice that the lock, the keys fit into the lock. And that's how we thought, that's the first model of how enzymes work. That's the first model to come out. Now, something you should know, we have a special sort of technical term for reactants. They're called substrates or substrate molecules. Know that. That will be on the test, okay? A lot of people come up to me after the test and say, Mr. Hammack, you never told us about substrates. I said, yes, it's in this lecture. So there it is. So remember what a substrate is. A substrate is another name for the reactants. Now what happens here is that the without the enzyme, these reactants are going to have a hard time reacting. And what that means is in order to react, they need to get next to each other in the right orientation so a bond can form. And that's not easy. So what the enzyme does is the enzyme provides a place, the active site, where the two reactants can come in. And when they come into the place, as you can see in the second part of my illustration, they're right next to each other. Because they're right next to each other, properly oriented, they can now form a covalent bond between them, and then you're left with a product. And then the enzyme just releases it, and now it's combined together, and now it's a product. Does that make sense to everybody? You guys see that? Pretty straightforward? Okay, good. Now, kind of the way I like to think about it is I like to think of the enzyme as a matchmaker. Okay? Imagine two single people. How are they ever going to get together? I mean, they could go to a singles bar. They could go to eHarmony, Match.com, something like that, right? Another way to do it is to have a matchmaker, someone who says, oh, I see this great person, person A, this other great person, person B, and what I'm going to do? I'm going to have them over to dinner at my house for 2 or 3 hours. They'll be sitting next to each other, kind of like the active site, and they'll be there for 2 or 3 hours, and hopefully by the end of the time, they will bond, and they will leave together as a possible relationship. Okay, so the matchmaker catalyzes this reaction, just like the enzyme catalyzes a reaction in living systems. Okay, well, it turns out that in science, we keep coming up with better models. And so they came up with a lock and key model at first. It worked pretty well, but later they found it wasn't exactly right. So they came up with this other model called the induced fit hypothesis, which is currently the working model of how enzymes work, and it's pretty much how we think they work. And if you look up on my picture, you'll see there's your enzyme with your active site, there's your substrate, but if you notice, the active site doesn't perfectly match the substrate. And so what happens here is the substrate comes in towards the active site, and the active site's kind of, here's my analogy, the active site is kind of like a glove that's a little bit too big for your hand. And as you put your hand into the glove actually starts to conform to your hand, and when you finally get the glove completely, your hand completely in the glove completely fits your hand perfectly. See, at first it was too big, and then it just, and this is called the induced fit. So as the substrate comes in, the active site conforms to it. Does that make sense to you guys? So it's not a perfect lock and key. It's a little bit different than that. And one of the things I want you to notice is look up here. I've specifically drawn the substrate as one big molecule. It comes into the active site, and in the active site, that causes them the two parts of that substrate to pull apart, and they leave as products. So what I'm trying to show you is that enzymes can do both. They can take two molecules and bring them together, or they can take one molecule and pull it apart. And so not only are they matchmakers, they are kind of like home wreckers, okay? They kind of, you know, ruin a marriage, which would be like, you know, it could be a divorce lawyer or something like that, you know, instead of, I don't know, you know, you can think of, what's that? Yeah, whatever, okay? You can think of some other, you can think of what that might be. Okay, next slide. An enzyme in action. This is a computer-generated graphic of an enzyme in action. Now, pop quiz. What kind of molecules are enzymes? Proteins, good. What kind of protein is this? Primary, secondary, tertiary, quaternary. Tertiary, very good. The enzyme's in blue, substrate's in red, and if you notice, the substrate molecule enters the active site, and as it does, the active site will conform around the substrate. And so this is an example of the induced fit hypothesis. The importance of enzymes. Okay, I want you guys to look at this slide, and I want you really to get this. This is really important to me. Every reaction in a living organism. Let's repeat that. Every reaction in a living organism. Let's repeat that. Every reaction in an organism. Okay? When I say every, I mean every. What do I mean by every? Every. Okay? Every reaction in a living organism is catalyzed by an enzyme. Is that amazing? Think about it. Every. Okay? So enzymes are therefore, in my humble estimation, the single most important group of macromolecules in living systems. Now, some people might debate with me and say, well, DNA is pretty important too. And I'm like, okay, I understand. We need the hereditary code. You know, so maybe they're comparable, okay? But they're certainly up there. And the reason I'm making a big deal about it is you probably, if I were to say to you, pop quiz, you tell me what's the most important macromolecule in all living systems, you'd probably tell me DNA. Because, you know, everyone thinks of that. You probably don't think enzymes, but they really are. You know, because every? Every reaction is catalyzed by an enzyme. Okay, and every enzyme has a suffix ASE, so you can always tell something's an enzyme. And what I've got here in this slide are a whole bunch of different types of enzymes. They're categories of enzymes. And you can't see it very well, but if you go home tonight and you look over this, you'll be pretty blown away. In fact, this is what I call my enzyme appreciation slide. So I want you guys to just kind of look at this and sort of go, ooh, and ah, ooh, ah. And just sort of just look at this slide and just go, aren't enzymes so amazing? They're just the coolest molecules. And I really want you to appreciate them because they're your friends, okay? So how do we control their activity? Well, first of all, you got to keep the temperature at some constant level or close to it. So, for instance, in my little picture here on the right, you see the optimal temperature for humans is somewhere in the high 30s Celsius. Oh, that's our body temperature. Interesting. And if you go away from that, enzymes start not working so well. They start denaturing. But what's kind of cool in this picture is you also see another chart, and this chart is for what we call thermophilic bacteria. Thermo means heat, philic means loving, heat-loving bacteria. These are bacteria that, if you've ever been to Yellowstone Park, you see their hot springs and you see they're beautiful. There are these beautiful colors, oranges, reds, blues, and turquoise and whatnot. Those are caused by bacteria that live in those hot springs, and they become, through evolution, they become adapted to that incredibly high temperature of like the high 70s in Celsius, extremely hot, okay? And that's where their proteins work best. You get hotter than that, then they denature, you know, and less than that, and they don't work either. So there's a critical range. Also, pH is important. So look at this illustration. There is an enzyme called pepsin. Its optimal pH is 2. Where do you think that's found in humans? Yeah, stomach, exactly. The pH of your stomach is around 2. So this is one of the enzymes that breaks down proteins in your stomach. And so it has to have a pH. It has to work best at a pH of 2. Then there's another one, trypsin, which works in a different part of your digestive system. And so it has a much different pH, which is, you know, up around 8. Okay. Why your parents told you to eat your vitamins and minerals, okay? I don't know if you guys know this, but many enzymes require what I call other non-protein molecules in order to function. They literally need a buddy, okay? They need a partner to help them do their job. And one of these groups of compounds are called cofactors. Cofactors are inorganic metal ions. When I say the word inorganic, what do I mean? Someone raise their hand. Tell me. Yeah. No carbon. Exactly. They don't have carbon. They're inorganic. And they're metal ions, and they temporarily bind to certain enzymes, and they are essential for their function. In other words, if you don't have these metal ions connecting, you know, binding to your enzymes, even though the enzymes are there, they don't work. And if you look on the right, there's a list of some of these cofactors, iron, copper, zinc, and which it's just amazing. You can have the enzyme. It's all there. Its tertiary structure is perfect, but you're missing, let's say, zinc. Enzyme won't work. So when your parents tell you to eat your minerals, this is why. Now, coenzymes. Coenzymes are organic molecules, so therefore they have carbon, and they're also required for the action of certain enzymes. And these are your, they're generally smaller. They're organic, but they're smaller than the enzymes. And you can see the picture on the right here. This is a big, big enzyme. And you'll look and you'll see the white. And the white represents the coenzyme, which binds to it. And when it binds to it, then it makes it functional. So coenzymes, another name for coenzymes, are vitamins, like B1, B2, B3, and so on and so forth. And so that's why you have to eat your vitamins, because many of your vitamins have to bind to an enzyme to make the enzyme work. And you probably never even knew that before. It's kind of amazing. Okay, enzymes can be inhibited. It turns out that, like I said, enzymes are critical for life. And if they're inhibited, the metabolic activity that's going on inside your body or inside of any living organism can be slowed down or even stopped. So the question is, whether inhibition is good or bad depends on the enzyme and what it does. And I'm not going to be showing this movie this year in class, but I'm going to show it for extra credit outside of class, the movie Lorenzo's Oil. Has anyone ever seen the movie Lorenzo's Oil? Oh, good. Okay, a couple of you. This movie is awesome. It has so much good AP Bio material in it, and specifically kind of the key part of it. It's a true story, by the way. The key part of the story is about enzymes and how they work or don't work or whatever. No. Enzyme inhibition, as I say here. And it's true. It makes you cry. It's just well acted. There's great biology in it. And so we'll do it one night. We'll have like a big AP Bio movie night, and you guys can come in and watch it. So my question is an understanding of enzyme inhibition important? You bet it is. Lorenzo certainly knows about that, as you'll see in the movie. So I hope that you realize it's more important than just learning it to pass a test. Enzymes and enzyme inhibition is critical to all life. And there's three types of inhibition: competitive inhibition, non-competitive inhibition, and irreversible inhibition. And what I'm going to do is we're going to stop here on Monday. We'll pick it up and we'll finish this lecture, because I want to do the whole enzyme inhibition in one piece. Okay, so that's it for today.